We'll dedicate our learning to Esther Gallup, Esther Avram Ben Golda. Hashem should bless him and give him a speedy recovery, and we're waiting for his return. And it's so befitting that this learning should be dedicated to him, because the subject we're learning is the source of happiness on the holiday of happiness, the holiday of Sukkot. And if there's one person who's taught us a lesson about happiness, it's Esther, who has been a constant smile shining in our yeshiva. So let's begin the Netivot Shalom on the source of happiness. So we're doing the Netivot Shalom on the holiday of Sukkot. Okay, so he begins by quoting a pasuk. The Torah says, "Ulkachtem lachem b'yom harishon," on the first day you'll take the four species, the lulav, the esrog, the hadasim, "usmachtem lifnei Hashem elokechem," and then the pasuk says, "and you will be happy before Hashem your God." Mashmaut haketuv, the verse seems to say, "shekol tachlit mitzvat lekichat dalet minim," that the whole point of taking the four species is to be happy. The pasuk aligns them. You'll take the four species, and you will be happy before Hashem your God. So we have to understand, how are these two things connected? How is the mitzvah of taking the four species connected to the idea of being happy on Sukkot? Because if you want to know the inner core, the inner essence of the holiday of Sukkot, so we call Sukkot, we say it in davening also, we say Zman Simchatenu. Right? We say it in davening, we say it in Yalev Yavo, we say it in Musaf. Sukkot is called the time of our happiness. Pesach is Zman Cherusenu, the time we went to freedom. Shavuos is Zman Matan Toratenu, the time we received the Torah. What's Sukkot? Sukkot is called the time of our happiness. That seems to be the essence of the holiday. So what's going on here? What is this happiness? And the pasuk seems to connect it to the idea of the four species. Od tzarich biur. Furthermore, we have to explain Omram Zal, that which our sages said, Shesimchat Beit HaShoeva Hayu Shoavin Ruach HaKodesh. Our sages say they'd have festivities in the temple, what we make a mock version of. It's called Simchat Beit HaShoeva. They'd have this whole party rejoicing as they drew waters from the Shiloach in preparation for the libation, and as they had this whole procession of leading the waters into the temple, they'd have rejoicing, and they'd juggle, and they'd dance. And the Talmud says that, why is it called Simchat Beit HaShoeva? The happiness of the drawing? So we'd say, very simple, you're drawing water. The Talmud says, no. We're rejoicing, and we're drawing Ruach HaKodesh, we're drawing levels of prophecy within that rejoicing. The Jerusalem Talmud says that the prophet Jonah, Yonah ben Amittai, he began being a prophet at Simchat Beit HaShoeva. He was there, everyone was dancing, everyone was singing, and suddenly he became a prophet, he started talking. So Simchat Beit HaShoeva is a place where we draw prophecy from. Lama davka b'mitzvah u'b'simcha zu nitalu ad l'madrigat Ruach HaKodesh. So why is it that this mitzvah, it's not Yom Kippur, you know, if you told me Yom Kippur, the Holy of Holies, we're all drawing levels of prophecy, I can understand. But that's not what we say. We say when everyone's dancing, everyone's happy, we're drawing water, this is the mitzvah from which we draw Ruach HaKodesh. Ken tzarich biur, so too we have to explain, ha-kesher ha-pnimi shel ha-mitzvot she-nitztavinu aleim b'chag. What is the inner message, the common theme of all the mitzvot that we are commanded on this holiday? Yeshivat Sukkah, sitting in the Sukkah. Arbat Aminim, the four species that we shake, the Lol Vesrog Hadasim Arovos, Veniso Chamayim, and the libation of the water. Those are the three mitzvot that are unique to the holiday of Sukkot. What's the common theme between them? The Mistaber Shekol Mitzvot Kshurot Lemahut HaChag. It would seem logical that all of these mitzvot are connected intrinsically to the core theme of the holiday. Just as we find on Passover, the mitzvah is eating matzah, and there's a connection between matzah and Passover, and the whole theme runs through all the mitzvot of the holiday. So the idea is as follows, he says. If we want to understand the level of happiness, a Jew can only attain happiness when he can cleanse himself, when he can shake free of the worldly pleasures and the focus he has on what's going on in this world, in Olam Hazeh. Kasher Adam Shakua Bahim, when a person is steeped, he is deep in the worldly pleasures, Lo'olam Eino Ba Al Sipuko, he is never satiated. If life is about all the worldly pleasures, he's always looking for more. I have an iPod, they came out with an iPad. I have an iPad, they came out with an iPhone. I have an iPhone, they came out with a Kindle. I have a Kindle, they came out with a new thing that's better than the Kindle. I don't know if you guys know. Someone came to me with a Shaila. What?
I don't know what the Kindle is.
Okay, I shouldn't know what a Kindle is. But someone came 2 weeks ago with a halachi question whether you're allowed to write God's name, read God's name. They have this thing that's better than that. I don't remember what it's called. You know what I'm talking about?
Book?
No. No, no. Okay.
Whether you're allowed to read God's name on
it. Yeah, it's a type of thing which has particles that have black and white on two sides, and it's not like a regular computer screen, which
is that what a Kindle is then?
Maybe.
I think the Kindle's like that.
Kindles like that? This thing was supposed to be like a more advanced version.
It might be a new Kindle.
I understand. What's the problem? You can't read God's name on
it. No, well, the idea is that every time you switch a page, you're erasing God's name. If that's considered ink, if that's considered writing,
yeah,
I discovered that there was something else out there other than a Kindle. At any rate...
But what if it's written... If God's name... Isn't it if God's name is written in like sand or something? It doesn't like count or something like that?
Right. So the question is, how do we consider this? Because in this case, it seems like it's ink. It's many, many points of black. And the question is, how do you view that halachically? Is that considered like ink? I took him to a posek who said he wants to think about it. I didn't get an answer yet. No. So, I assume it'll be mutter, but I gave a few arguments why I thought it should be mutter, but he didn't want to answer off the cuff. He wanted to look into it more deeply. Yeah, but at any rate, so the Netivot Shalom says we had a bunch of questions. What were our questions? Number one, what's the connection between four species and happiness? Mm-hmm. Number two, why is Simchat Beit HaShoeva the place where people draw out Ruach HaKodesh? Number three, what is the internal theme, the connection between all the mitzvot of this holiday, the sitting of the sukkah, the nisuch hamayim, and the four species? And he begins and he says, so the theme of the holiday is happiness. And he says, happiness, a Jew can only attain happiness when he shakes himself completely clean of the worldly pleasures and the focus on this world. And when a person is deep in the pleasures of this world, he's never going to be satiated. K'ma'amal Chazal, as the Medrash Rabba says on Koheles, the Medrash says, no one ever dies feeling like they've had half the pleasure they wanted to have. If you're talking about worldly pleasures, we always have more. Just ask a person. That's one of the reasons why people are never happy in married life. Because if you're always looking at what's out there, so then there seems to be much more pleasure that's still available. Especially in today's day and age. If it was once upon a time this way, so then today it's all the more so. Just look at every billboard all around you. So if that's what we're looking for, we're never going to find it. So, Eino Savea Lo'olam Bechinat Masbio Re'ev. The Talmud tells us in Sukkah that David HaMelech forgot a very important halacha. There's a halacha that says that Ever Katan Yesh Ba'adam. God created man with a small limb. His maleness. Masbio, if he tries to satiate it, Rev. If a person tries to satiate his desire for promiscuity, the more he tries to satiate it, the hungrier it's going to be. Marivo, but if he keeps it hungry, meaning he only gives it a little bit to eat at a time, so then Savea, then he could be satiated. If a person tries to get his full, he's never going to have his full. So that's the idea of all worldly pleasures. Rak shemitna'er mikol nyanei olam hazeh, as midat asimcha amitit. The Talmud says David HaMelech forgot it, and David HaMelech tried to satiate himself. And then by trying to satiate himself, he was even more hungry than had he not tried to satiate himself. You guys following me? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So he says, when can you attain true happiness? When a person can shake himself of all the issues of this world. One second, I assume
everyone has a little joke over here. You guys,
yeah?
Is everyone hot?
What?
It's an awesome joke. Good job. That was
it. Here's the formula.
על דרך המשל המובא מבעלי המוסר, and in the Musar they tell the following משל, the following allegory. למלך אחד שהיה חולה מאוד. There was a king who was very ill, והרופאים אמרו שרפואתו היחידה היא שילביש כתונת של אדם ששרוי בשמחה ללא כל דאגות. And the doctor said the only way he could cure himself is if he wears the clothing of a person who is in complete happiness with no worries. וכאשר הלכו לחפש ולבקש, לא מצאו שום אדם נטול דאגות. So, right away, the king sends out his messengers, they start looking, and they can't find anyone who's happy without worries. You know anyone that's happy without any worries? They couldn't find anyone. וכאשר לאחר מאמצים רובים נמצא סוף סוף אדם שמח וטוב לב שאין לו כל דאגות. And when they finally found the person who, upon being interviewed, he says he's got no worries and he's just happy. So they tell him, okay, so can we buy your shirt off you? And he tells them, "Shen lo bichlal ketonet." He says, "I don't own a shirt. I'm not just standing here without a shirt because the fun of it. I don't own one." V'ilmalei haya li ketonet, arei kvar hayu li da'agot sviva. He says, "You know, if I owned the shirt, then I'd be worried about it, wouldn't I?" Rak mechamat she'en li meuma, arei nisharu tamid b'simcha, ve'ani mechusar kol da'aga. He says, "Because I don't have anything to lose, I don't have what to be worried about. So that's why I'm so happy." So it's obviously this is a story, right? This is what the Baalei Musar say. The halacha says you have to wear a shirt for Shmona Esrei. You gotta own a shirt. You gotta wear shoes. It's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Person's supposed to own a pair of shoes. Don't get your feet hurt. There are basic halachas. We do have to get dressed. But there's a message behind the story. Meaning a person cannot attain true happiness so long as he's still focused on his desires for worldly things. So long as my life is still about what I want to still accomplish or gain in this world, so I'm not going to attain happiness. Now, we have to know that there is a certain balance to this. I'm going to add my 2 cents. A few years ago, we took a vote whether we should just read the Tivot Shalom without my 2 cents or with my 2 cents. And the guys voted for my 2 cents. So I'm going to add my 2 cents. In the Siddur Otzara Tfilot, so the commentaries over there, right, there are 2 types of prayers. There's a guy who prays, "God, give me a house. I want to have a house to live in. I want to have a roof over my head. I want to have the convenience of not having to worry about paying rent or having to move or worrying if the landlord's going to raise rent next year. I want a house." That's one level. That's the level many people are on. Then there's the level of a guy who says, "Ribbono shel Olam, I'm happy with life. Thank you for everything you're giving me. If I had a house, then I could shine Torah a little bit better. Then I would be better able to serve you." And he doesn't just say it. It's not just lip service. That's really what his worldly requests are about. That's a madrega. I had a friend once whose wife never got pregnant. They were married maybe 15, 17 years. They already had a white beard. And she never got pregnant. The end of the story, we'll skip to the end of the story. They have a child. I don't know if they got a second child, but I bumped into him 2 years ago. He moved out of Jerusalem like 3 years ago, and I bumped into him a year later, and he told me his wife gave birth to a child. So that was the nice ending to the story. Could be they had another child since then. I don't know. But he once met me, and I told him, "You know, every day, 3 times a day, I daven for you and your wife." So he said to me, "Some people want a child because they want their own continuation, and they want a kid to call their own, and they want to have a George Foreman Jr. We're not like that. Me and my wife, it's just because we want a continuation of the service of Hashem." And I got to tell you, I left that conversation and I said, "Yeah, right." Okay. I wish he's on that madrigan. You have to know, he's much bigger than I am. You know, I'm I'm not comparing, you know. That type of level is beyond me. I think there is such a level. We should aspire for such a level. This guy's Bemet, you know, he finishes Shas every 2-3 years. He's a big Talmud Chacham. And maybe he is on that Madrega. I don't believe it. I think we have to be realistic in life. We're normal, we're human beings. Hashem made it that we want children and that we want the worldly things. But we have to know that even though he's saying the only way to attain true happiness is when you rid yourself of your desires of this world, we have to know there's another level. There is a level where I don't desire this world for the sake of this world. I desire it as a tool for the service of Hashem, and I think each of us can attain that level in certain respects in our life. I just think that children is so close to one's heart, such a basic desire that a person has. I find it hard to believe that a person is on Avraham Avinu's Madrega, that it's all about your service, Hashem. But who knows, you know, maybe that's because I'm so distant from it that I don't see it, you know, but maybe he's there, okay. Yeah.
If a person is constantly filling himself up with Kedusha and things that are pure, that will start to create a pure heart and a pure way of thinking, right? Meaning that doesn't it exist that there are people like that who exist, like the big Gedol Adorim of today, Nachon, they're like Rabbi Eliashiv and Rav Shteim, and these are people who are huge. These people are not in this world, right? So these people, they're on a high level, to say the least. So doesn't that exist? You're saying someone's finishing Shas every 2 or 3 years and they're on this level. Isn't there a potential for that if his whole life is focused in Kedusha and purity?
So let me tell you, Dvar Torah, that I heard from Rav David Feinstein once. Okay. He raised the following question. He said, there's a conversation between Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. God tells Yaakov, go back to the land of Israel, the time has come, leave your father-in-law, Laban. And Yaakov comes to his wives, and he says, you know, I see your father, and things just aren't the same, and you know everything that's been going on between me and him, and God told me we got to go back to the land of Israel. So they tell him, oh yeah, our father's been terrible to us, we have no reason to stay here, we have nothing to gain, and at this point we really have to go, so whatever God says, do. So you look at that conversation, you say, what's going on here? These are tzaddikim. They're giving you all the worldly reasons why it's time to leave, and then they say, yeah, of course, so do whatever God said. Is that the way we'd expect tzaddikim should talk? There's a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara says that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai went over to Rabbi Yoshua and asked him, is the evening prayer as obligatory as the morning and afternoon Shmona Esrei? So he said, no. Then they walked into the academy. He asked Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel said, yes. They walked into the academy and again, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai asked the question. Rabbi Gamliel said, yes, it's as obligatory as all the other ones. Silence. Rabbi Gamliel says, does anyone disagree? So Rabbi Yeshua says, no. So Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yeshua, I was told in your name that you said that the evening prayer isn't as obligatory as everything else. Stand on your feet and they'll bring testimony against you. So Rabbi Yeshua stands up and then he sees that it was the same guy. So Rabbi Yeshua says, well, if I were alive and he were dead, then I could contradict him. But being that he's alive, so I can't say any different. So you look at that and you say, what do you mean? If he were dead, you would lie? Okay, we're talking about Rabbi Yeshua here. So Rabbi Feinstein said that the idea behind it is that the sages were so meticulously honest that when they had something to say that they knew they had partiality for, they didn't come out and say, well, we're going to do this because God said so. They first lay the cards on the table. So Leah and Rachel first lay the cards on the table. They said, obviously our partiality lies with going back to Israel. And so we're not going to tell you, we're not going to play this game and say, well, God said so, of course you got to go. We're going to make it into this religious issue. No, let's first lay the cards on the table. Our own feelings are, we should get out of here. The truth is, God said so, of course you should do it. But an honest person, and the greater a person is, the more tuned he is to his own partiality, an honest person first puts down his partiality on the table. And the same thing with Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yeshua could have said, well, no, you're right, of course I did say that, but I changed my mind, or whatever the answer was. But he said, the truth is, I can't deny it. The guy's sitting here. So we're not going to go into what I held and what I do hold and everything. Yeah, this is what I said. This is very important. We once had a couple that the husband hated being in Chutzarts. He couldn't find the kehillah that he liked, and he couldn't find a job that he liked, and everything about Chutzarts didn't work for him. And the wife also wanted to make aliyah, but she was in the middle of getting her degree, and she had her parents there, and everything was working fine. So the husband kept emailing me and telling his wife, halachically, a Jew is supposed to be in Israel, and you're supposed to be willing to forgo, and blah, 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 a whole list of reasons why a Jew has to be in Israel. And I kept emailing him back, stop being so frump. Let your wife finish her degree. Don't go arguing with her halachically and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, come on, let's call a spade a spade. You hate being there, and it's your own partiality. And the halacha is a nice excuse. Okay, so I said it nicer than that. I didn't word it like that. I was more diplomatic than that. But at the end of the day, a person has to recognize his own partiality, and even great people. And quite the contrary. Great people first identify their partiality.
Something that we mentioned was interesting. You talk about worldly affairs and worldly pleasures. So an individual who's living just for the sake of Kedusha is completely removed from that in his whole purpose. Even with partiality, it's not... nothing is present. We're talking about the Gedolim, you know.
Right, but that's what I'm telling you. Even the Gedolim are partial. Mm-hmm. Even the Gedolim, a person's a person at the end of the day.
If he had said to you that he did it for the sake of Puravu, you would say that... Would you change your... mind if he said something to that degree, that his purpose was just to fulfill the biblical mitzvah of that? Is that...
I don't think it's my job to gauge anyone else.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying, but that's...
But I think we all have to be realistic. Mm-hmm. Our normal tendencies we all have. You know, there's a fantastic medrash about one of the biggest tzaddikim of all times. There's one person called Yishai, David's father, who was... The Gemara says he's one of the people who never sinned the sin weighty enough to die. Mm-hmm. Meaning he died because God decreed that human beings have to die. He never had any sin that deserved death. Him, Binyamin, Yaakov's son Binyamin. There are a few people, the Gemara says, never had such a weighty sin. So we just said, we say, Ki avivi mi azavuni v'Hashem yaspeini. Right? My father and mother leave me and Hashem gathers me. Says in Tehillim, David HaMelech said, okay, so it's a chapter we're saying, tell them all the time. So
call my wife if you want.
I don't remember which chapter it is, but the Medrash says on that pasuk, my father and mother have forsaken me and God gathers me. Says the Medrash, everyone knows that when a couple are intimately together, so after they're intimate, he turns to his side and falls asleep, she turns to her side and falls asleep, and they forget about the fact that there's a seed inside of her that can still develop into this great human being. So he says, everyone's focused on their own pleasures. My father and mother, they both forgot about me after they were intimate, but you, Hashem, you gather me, you take the seed, and you made me into a human being. So I read that Medrash, it's quoted in Rashi on that Pasuk, and I didn't know what to do with it. How could David HaMelech speak that way about his own parents? His father Yishai is one of the biggest tzaddikim that ever lived. You know what you just said? Wow. A man like Yishai, it says in Shulchan Aruch, there are different kavanot that a person is supposed to have when he's with his wife. And of course, the kavanah is supposed to be to bring a child, to serve Hashem, to do the mitzvah, pru or vu. That's what David has to say about his own father. Blew me away. Wow. So I went to one of my rabbeim. And I said, what's pshat? How could David HaMelech say that about his own father? So Rabbi Yort, who was the Rosh Kollel in the yeshiva there, so he told me that, of course, when Yishai and his wife were together, initially their focus was, we're here to do a mitzvah. They had good kavana. But the nature of a human being is that when he's doing something that he really enjoys, then at some point the kavana flips. Mm-hmm. At some point, as much as you begin saying, well, my kavana is X, well, you sit down to have a slice of pizza and you say, my kavana is so that I have koach to eat and I have koach to learn everything. By the time you finish with the slice of pizza, your stomach is what's foremost in your mind. It's very hard to maintain. There are those moments where you don't hold on to that. That's not really your focus. So he said, that's what David HaMelech was talking about. So I think that we've sidetracked enough. Back to the Netivot Shalom. So he says, so that the essence of happiness is really simplicity. It's the capacity to separate oneself from the worldly desires. V'lachen chag ha-sukot uzman simchateinu. And that specifically is why the holiday of Sukkot is the time of our happiness. She'inyano, because the idea of the holiday of Sukkot is le'itna'er minyanei ha'olam hazeh, to shake ourselves clean of this world a little bit. K'ma'amar Maran Baba Zayah Hanal, she'besukot Yehudim itna'er mibeito, like the Rebbe said, that on Sukkot the Jew cleanses himself of his home, umikol nyanei hanot ha'olam hazeh, and all the focus of this world, the pleasures of this world, umitbodeh im ha'kadosh baruch hu b'sukkato. When we enter the Sukkah, we're entering a place where it's like our little chuppah with Hashem. Chasen and Kala have their own little room where they go together, but this is what we have in a Sukkah. It's a new wedding where we're again coming alone with Hashem, so to speak, into private quarters with Hashem. That's what a Sukkah represents. And that's why the mitzvah of Sukkot comes after we've cleansed ourselves, after Rosh Hashanah, after Yom Kippur. Only then do we walk into the Sukkah. Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim, ki az ish yudim sugal li'itna'er mikol yanei hana'ot ha'olam hazeh. It's only after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur that we could shake ourselves of this world a little bit. V'liyot im kono bilvad. And we could walk into the chuppah. We could walk again and be alone with Hashem in our sukkah. Odita bevet Avraham, and furthermore it says in the work Bet Avraham, Shiyom Kippur mechaper al hachataim v'pgamim ha'avim v'amgushamim. Yom Kippur is atonement for the physical sins, but a guy still has the stench from the sins and the pleasures that were really permissible. It was within the realm that was permissible, but he was off focus. So on Sukkot, what we do is we shake ourselves of all that. You don't have the same convenience out in the sukkah with the bugs and everything else like you do in the house. It's not the same thing. Yeah, we have a fan, we have a light, it's nice. It's not the same thing. We all know that you walk inside and you say, ah, okay. You walk out to the sukkah, you say, oh, Baruch Hashem, have a mitzvah. But it's not exactly like being in a stone house or whatever. Even the Machon Meir dorm rooms are better, right? No? Okay. You The sukkah cleanses oneself of whatever smell and whatever he was off a little bit in the pleasures of this world. So explaining this is, Yom Kippur we serve Hashem in awe, in fear. What's Yom Kippur all about? We're standing before the Creator. What are you scared about? The things that you did that were wrong. What did I do that was forbidden? That's what Yom Kippur is about. Sukkot is about the love we have for Hashem. Sukkot is totally different than Yom Kippur. It's a totally different spirit of the holiday. And Bechinat v'minoch techavikeni. Sukkot is like, it says in the Song of Songs, the girl describes how he puts his arm around me and hugs me. And when it comes to love, we have to know that anything physical distances us to some degree from Hashem. The Gemara says that in different words. You want to connect to Hashem, you have to separate yourself from this world. And that's what we're doing on Sukkot. We take a step away from the physical. We take a step away from the physical house, from other things that are physical. And that's why this is the holiday of happiness. Because only when you separate from the physical can you really focus on what's important in life and be happy. And if you stop and think about it, there are a lot of deep thoughts that he's telling us here. Think for a minute. I once sat with a group of people, couples, and I asked them to make a list of what saddens them. What points make them happy? What points make them sad? And if you stop and think about it, make a list for yourself. You'll see that this concept you're writing out for yourself. Just ask yourself, I'm worried, will I have a job? I'm worried. Think about it. What are you worried about? What are the worries? What are the sadness that a person has in his life? And what are the true moments of happiness? And what's the true happiness that we aspire for? If you think about it for a moment, we once did this in the Jewish home class. I asked guys what they think will make them happy in married life. I was very impressed with guys' answers. If you think about it, there are a lot of things that we want. We want companionship. We want a lot of things in the home. We want tranquility. We want a place, refuge. You come home. You come to your home. You want to be accepted there. But if you think about it, the demons, the things that really are the serpents in our closets, are like he's saying.
You said the stench is still with us, though?
He says that Sukkot cleanses us from that.
From the stench that's after Yom Kippur?
Yeah.
But can I ask about a concept?
You can think that is a chair. If not, there's another chair in the hallway.
Okay.
Just to help us there. Next to our door. Ki mitkayim bo kemamar maran hakadosh mikuvrin zchuto egen leinu eze olam male or umtikut leelu sheinam shkuim bo. When is the world filled with light and sweetness? When you're not sunk in it. When you're not focused on it, then you could have a world of happiness. I said this to a guy who was dating a month ago. A good friend of mine who's been dating for years. And I told him, if you're looking for the wife that everything is joy, you have to know that joy is a byproduct of productivity. If you live a life which you're happy with and you're productive in the way you'd like to be in life, then joy is a byproduct. But if you're looking for joy as a goal, happiness is your goal, then you're not going to get it. Happiness is not a goal, it's a byproduct. So he didn't like what I said. But what happened was, a day later, his father called me. So I told his father, I said, look, your son's dating so many girls. And I told him this line and he disagrees with me. So his father said, well, I also disagree with you. So I said, okay, could you define me what you think is happiness? So he went on to give a convoluted, a whole complicated explanation. I said, now, what's the difference between what you said and what I said? So he thought for a minute and he said, you're right. So I said, okay, so now go call your son and tell him that, because he's barking up the wrong tree in all his dating. So people think if it's going to be fireworks every minute, then that's the right girl. If every minute I think it's true joy. No, if it's a girl that I'm going to build with and I can see a future with and that together we'll be productive and we'll work in the same direction in life, then happiness will be a byproduct of that. So the Rebbe from Kuvrin said, when is the world filled with light and sweetness? When you're not sunk into it. And those who are sunk into it see a world that's dark and bitter. We had a guy who was dating and the girl calls us up and she says, the guy told me he's been to shrinks in his life. So I said, yeah, and what's the problem with that? So she says, I don't know, here in Israel people don't go to shrinks. So I said, okay, let's get in touch with the rabbi from his congregation. And let's find out what percentage of the people in that congregation go to shrinks. So the rabbi tells her, well, 40%. He says, that's the norm. I don't know who doesn't. That was his line. And we called two rabbis from that area, and they both said, she's concerned about that, then she can't marry anyone from our neck of the woods. Because by us, that's the norm. Who doesn't go? So, okay. They live in a very wealthy part of the United States. And usually it goes hand in hand. I spoke to someone today. He told me that the norm for many years already is that every president has two shrinks. I didn't know this. You guys knew this?
No.
Every president
has a shrink and a shrink.
I don't know. That's how it works. Two shrinks. I don't know. Every president. I didn't know this was so. I just heard this today. So when you're sunk in this world, if that's the focus, then the world turns dark and bitter on you. then suddenly, wait a second, so what's it all worth? Why is it that so many Hollywood stars commit suicide? They go on overdose. Because they've made it. You know, everyone else is still aspiring to get to where they are. They've gotten there, and then they look at it and they, wait a second, this isn't what I thought it would be. I'm not happy. Like Marilyn Monroe wrote when she committed suicide. Again, I don't. This was quoted to me. What'd she write? I realize I'm never going to be happy. Why'd she realize she's never going to be happy? Because if she has everything and she's still not happy, so then where's there to go from here? But that's what the Rebbe from Kuvrin said. If you're sunk in the world, if you're sunk in the worldliness of the world, then it's dark and bitter. The Kevan, I shouldn't have even mentioned their name in the sukkah, that wasn't nice. Okay. The Kevan she'al yedei mitzvat sukkah mitna'er u'poresh legamre mekol shaychut l'inenei olam hazeh, being that through the mitzvah of sukkah, a person cleanses himself, he shakes himself clean of his connection to this world, and then he's not sunk in this world. So when we step out of our home, when we step out of our focus on this world, then zochel izman simchateinu, then he merits to enter a time of happiness, male or mitikut, a time that's filled with light and sweetness. And then he goes on to develop this theme. I don't know, you guys have koach to continue?
Yeah.
Should we switch? Yes? So he says, okay, so then that's the theme of Sukkot. The Zayn Yan Mitzvat Arba'at Aminim, and that's also the idea of the four species. We all know the Medrash that the four species correspond to four types of Jews. You have the species that is tasty and has a good smell, you have the species that just has a good smell, you have a species that, each species corresponds to a different type of Jew. But there's another Medrash. The Medrash Rabbah in Vayikra gives another correspondence for the four species, and it says they correspond to body parts. The Medrash says the lulav is long and straight like our spine. The adasim, they're oval, they're like the eyes. The aravas are long, they're like the lips, and the estrog is like the heart. That's what it says in the Medrash Rabbah, that the species correspond to different parts of the body. Yeah.
What about like the four sons?
Maybe the different types of Jews can be the four sons. Maybe, yeah. It's a nice thought. I hear. V'zein yan mitzvat arba'at minim shem domin le'evarim. So he's going with the Medrash in Vayikra, the Medrash Rabbah, that says that the four species are like the limbs of the body. Shebehem nichlelu kol ha'shoroshim shel hana'ot ha'adam. That these four limbs, they encompass the roots of all of man's pleasures. Ein ro'ah, the eye sees what a person wants. V'alev chomed, and then the heart desires. V'ashidra, hiyam kasherot ben moach hadat, hamakor lemidat yisod v'atziyuma degufa. And the spine is what connects from the thought process in the brain throughout the whole body. V'aspataim, and then the lips, shekol amal adam lefihu, hainu inyanei tavat achila, because a person works for his mouth for the different foods he wants to eat. The mitzvah ba leorot, and what the mitzvah is coming to indicate is that shall yehudin imsor kol hanaotav lehashem itbarach. We take all four species. The four species correspond to different stages in the pursuit of worldly pleasures, and we shake them all in the honor of Hashem. We're showing that our pleasures are supposed to be focused for the honor of Hashem. V'ze pirush hakatuv ulkachtem lachem bayom harishon, and that's an understanding of the verse. It says, take for you on that first day these four species. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem lokechem, and then you will be happy before Hashem your God. Lefi she'al yedei mitzvat dal daminim she'inyanam nimsor Hashem et kol inyanei hanot olam hazeh, because through the mitzvah of the four species, that the idea behind them is to focus the worldly pleasures to Hashem, al yedei zeh adam megeh lemidat ha'simcha. Through this you attain happiness. So there's a lot of expansion we could do here.
Who's the author of this?
The Rebbe of Slonim. So,
when he shakes him, is the idea that he's now free of those worldly pleasures?
I don't want to say what he didn't say. I don't know.
What's the idea? The idea is that he shakes it, and what he's representing, that he's giving it up for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't understand.
In that direction, that he's focusing it to Hashem. But more than that, he doesn't say. So I don't want to say.
Now he's cleansed, and now after he's cleansed, now he's giving up his worldly pleasure. So now he's...
He didn't say to give it up as much as to focus it for Hashem.
Focus it for Hashem.
וזהו גם עניין השמחה המופלגת שהייתה בשמחת בית שואבן. This is also the idea behind the extraordinary happiness that was present when they drew the water in the שמחת בית השואבן. כי ניסוך המים כמבואר לאל מרמז על מסירת כל האהבות להשם יתברך. The libation of water alludes to the focus of our love to Hashem. ועל ידי כך משיגים את מידת השמחה האמיתית. And through that a person can attain true happiness. וזה שאמר כל מי שלא ראה שמחה... You guys notice this. There's really a dual theme here. Meaning a person can hear the first part of his sentence and miss the second part of his sentence. I think all of us are hearing what he's saying about focusing the pleasures to Hashem. And I think we're not hearing the result of true happiness. Meaning that's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think when you first hear this thought, it's very bothersome. The best allegory I can think of it's only good for married people. There's an idea that a rabbi once said, but that's what I was contemplating before. I'll give you an example that we could all sense. The next time you take a fruit, the next time you take something you're going to eat here, before you eat it, stop and think for a minute. I'm doing this because there's a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. Mm-hmm. We all know you took the fruit because you felt like eating an apple or a pretzel or a tea biscuit. But before you eat it, stop and forget what's going on around you. Think for a minute, I'm going to eat this and enjoy every minute for the sake of the mitzvah of Simchat Yom Tov. Think about it for a minute. You'll experience a different slice of apple. You'll experience a different tea biscuit or a different pretzel. Try it. And after you see it, try it on Shabbos. And you'll see that the food just tastes better. You'll see it's different. We have a choice how to focus our senses. Okay, right now, you guys aren't listening to the cars down there on the highway. You're not noticing the fan blowing on you. We have only so much we can focus on. And one of the keys to being able to enjoy this world is being able to focus our senses. And we have to realize that when he says that this is a key to enjoying, to true happiness, he's not just saying that. You can get there. And then it's not about giving up, it's about gaining. Meaning when we hear him say it, I think that the point we hear most strongly is, oh, so I'm supposed to give up on everything in this world. And we have to realize that he's talking to us about gaining, he's not talking about giving up. It's just a shift of focus. But the product of it all is that you end up happier. You end up with what people spend their whole lives they don't attain. I'm with you.
I understand very well what you said now, but I still don't get the connection to the Arba Minim.
He says that the Arba Minim correspond to the four limbs, and those four limbs are the limbs that are really used by a human being for his pleasure. And when we take them and we hold them in the honor of Hashem, what we're saying is that we have to take our pleasures and focus them in the service of Hashem. We have to shake ourselves of our focus of what do I want, and focus it for Hashem. If you want, here we could say another thought. Whenever we're faced with questions in life, when we're faced with dilemmas, every dilemma can be boiled down to one question. Am I going to come first, or is God going to come first? What does God want? What do I want? If we really take our questions and boil them down, they all end up there. Now, sometimes we tell ourselves, well, I don't know what God really wants. Deep down inside, we know. We're kidding ourselves. We like to say we don't know. If you really don't know, go and verify. But every challenge, every difficult situation can really be boiled down to that. And we'll be saving ourselves a lot of complications, because sometimes we don't like boiling things down to that. We like adding a lot of details, but there's this and there's that and there's other thing, but we all know we're avoiding the real issue.
As Jewish people, when we look to mirror people, we look at the like I said, like the big rabbis of the time, Nachoni, you see that they don't care about worldly pleasures at all. They, you know, the big rabbis, they sit in fill themselves up with Kedusha all the day. So is once a Jew finds what is the Torah in a healthy way, is that his ultimate goal? That he, each Jew is within a certain realm that he can achieve a certain degree, right? Not everyone can be Rav Eliyashiv. So should that be our goal, is that we should try to slowly start to remove ourselves to the level that we get to the point that we're on their level in a healthy manner?
I think that...
Or keep some worldly pleasures.
I think that a person has to work very, very gradually. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's better, and he's working on one theme over here. I'm not translating what he's saying exactly literally, because he keeps saying, cleanse yourself of worldly pleasures. And I keep saying, focus your worldly pleasures. Meaning I'm adulterating my translation here a little bit. And the reason is because in other areas in his work, he keeps pointing out another theme, which I don't think is contradictory, meaning, and that's why I translate it this way. And that is that he says the whole purpose of God's creation of man is that man down on earth will take the worldly world and focus it in Hashem's service. Uh-huh. So I think that it's not a contradiction between what he's saying here and what he's saying there. When he says cleanse ourselves of worldly pleasures, what he means is my focus in life going to be driving a Rolls Royce? Once upon a time that was my focus. I'm telling you, when I was a kid, that was like one of the things I knew I wanted in life. I wanted to drive a Rolls Royce, or at least have it parked in my garage. That was like, as a kid, that was clear to me. It was, what? We'll get to that today. Even if I had the money, I wouldn't want it. I'm not interested.
That's what I'm saying. When a Jew gets to a certain point, when a Jew finds what is the Torah, none of this matters to him, right? So then once he gets to that point where he doesn't want to drive a Rolls Royce anymore, and we get down to like sort of past like the elementary stages, and we get to a point where a Jew knows now where to focus his energies, now is the purpose for him to slowly start removing the other things in a healthy, gradual way and try to get to those...
I'm saying it depends what. A lot of it should happen naturally. Mm-hmm. Meaning a lot of it shouldn't have to be external work. A lot of it is a byproduct of true work, meaning as you're working and focusing on learning, so you suddenly ask yourself, well, I could go out for Ben Azmanim now and run around the country, but I don't need as big a break now, and I feel I want to learn more. Meaning you're describing it as a very external type of thing, where this is the way I should be, so let me do it this way. When I think it's much healthier when it comes from within, when it comes from a true growth. This is what I feel like. This is what I want to do. I could tell you about myself. Many years, sitting in the sukkah was a very tedious thing for me. I'd feel like I like being inside. So I'd find every cop out not to be in the sukkah. I remember as a kid, it was like, this is a shahako. This is less than a kibbutz of a mezonos. It's like, I'd find my excuses. Right now it's raining. Right now it's too hot. I'd find excuses not to be in the sukkah. And then at some point, I came to the realization that, hey, everything I eat in the sukkah is another mitzvah. I got to be stupid to be eating inside. It wasn't like, theoretically, this is what I should be doing, this is what I'll be gaining. No, when I was at that level. So I was doing it this way. I was finding my excuses to be out of the sukkah. At some point, it became real where I said, why would I want to leave the sukkah? If I drink this inside, all I did was drink a cup of water. If I drank it in the sukkah, I got a mitzvah. What am I, stupid? Yeah, luckily I don't have to drink a cup of water in the sukkah, but why shouldn't I? And I'm saying it's a world of a difference between telling yourself, okay, so now I'm going to force myself to be in the tzukkah all the time and eat and drink, and that I think is unhealthy,
right.
And coming to a realization and a feeling, I want to, and I think that's healthier. So you keep describing it as something very external. Well, I should be, and that's all I should want. If it's external, I'm not sure it's good.
That's what I'm saying. It's an obvious natural processing that when a Jew starts to cleanse the neshama from all the dirt and stuff, and he starts to learn Torah over a period of time, you know, a few years or whatever it is, that he naturally comes into things. This is the reality, right? I'm sure as you've seen, Rabbi, over the course of time. So it's a natural process. So once, not in an external, like tomorrow I'm going to throw away my television because I saw my rabbi throw away his television. Like naturally you want to throw away your television. So I'm actually trying to describe the opposite. So I'm saying, is the ultimate goal though... I don't mean like, okay, I understand what you're saying externally, but I mean is that in our process, we're still making conscious decisions. Nachon? So as we're continuing to grow and to get to different levels, we still have to make like conscientious decisions when it comes to things in your home, for instance, when it comes to certain places that you go, you still have to make decisions whether or not your whole life is in Torah or not. You still have to still make, do you understand, decisions
about
based upon,
but on the decisions, I think it's slow and steady is better. Slow and steady. Well, slower is always better than quicker.
No, for sure.
And as slow as you're going to want to go, I'll probably want to go slower. I've seen too many people run too fast and not make it. So the slower the better. Bemet, I can give you a lot of examples. I mean, I've told a lot of couples to be very makel on a lot of things, because what we have a rule in the Gemara. The Gemara says, better a small amount that you stick to than a big amount that you don't stick to. And that's it's a Gemara, it's an Avos Travinasan, it's a constant theme. So, slow. But the reason I keep adulterating my translation of what he said is because he himself, throughout his work, keeps stressing that if God wanted angels to serve him, he would have made angels. Why did God make human beings who have a Torah? Because human beings can take the physical and sanctify it. Human beings can take their worldly pleasures and make them into holy things. They could take a good meal and have it in honor of Shabbos, in honor of Yom Tov, in honor of Asim. So the point is to take the physical and enjoy it in a positive way. And here he's saying, shake yourself of the worldly things. I don't think he means, so don't have anything worldly. I think he means, like that Rolls Royce. Like, if that's my focus, if I keep having things that are totally unnecessary, but they could really make a person's focus in life. Meaning, I remember when I first came to Israel, I said, there's no way I'm going to make Aliyah because I can't handle living without air conditioning. And I don't see myself affording air conditioning in this country. So for years, I was here thinking I'm not going to make Aliyah. And then I didn't force myself. I didn't have a choice. America's Rav, they didn't have air conditioning. I lived in the hottest room. It was like the southeast corner or southwest corner, whichever one's the hottest. I had the sun all day. Like when I went to sleep in the afternoon, I'd wake up and all my sheets down to the mattress were soaked. I mean, it was so you live like that for a few years, you suddenly realize, hey, I can do this. There are things that's what I think he means, and that's why I'm not translating it literally, because I think it's going to be misunderstood. I don't think his point is, okay, so don't own a shirt like that guy who was the happiest guy. That's not his point. His point is balance. Focus the positive for Avodat Hashem and cleanse yourself of the stuff that's really unnecessary. I remember we had a guy, maybe this was in your time, we had a guy who came to a late Thursday night class, put his laundry in the dryer, and comes into class, I don't believe it! So the guy's asking what happened. He says, my t-shirt was stolen from the dryer. So I never saw a guy get so upset over a t-shirt. I said, well, what's the big deal? He said, that's a $150 t-shirt. So I didn't know they have $150 t-shirts. You know, it was a news to me. I didn't know they made such t-shirts. What?
Made out of gold.
Well, the other guys in class all knew what he was talking about. I didn't know they made such things. Well, the guy who stole it knew because he didn't take any of the other laundry. I mean, so I guess when you live like that, he knew, they knew. Okay, so that's what I think he means. You know, that's something that's unnecessary.
What I'm saying is that in the short term, or not the short term, in the long term, you see that obviously people who fall are people who are doing things too quickly, but just in a theoretical sense, when you observe and read stories and people and say, is this our ultimate goal? I'm not necessarily meaning for practical application for me in my life, because obviously that's unsafe behavior, obviously, right? But when you read, you know, books on Gedolim and you see different people and you observe their actions and their mannerisms and things like that, and you see what they need in this world, you don't say this is something I'm going to do tomorrow, obviously.
I think the goal has to be growth and keeping Torah and living a Torah lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And if this happens, it happens naturally. Yes. It happens as a byproduct. Right. It's not. I don't think it's a goal. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. Yeah. He was first. Yeah.
So, about what you're saying, what about some of the ideas like doing stuff before you actually, like, you know, like it says in the halacha, you should do good things, even though you don't actually, you know, feel like doing them, then you'll come to want to do them. And also about, like, sometimes, I guess by living a Torah lifestyle, you should be growing and, you know, being more cleansed and trying to be clinging to Torah more. But if you're not, then you're never going to have that feeling of wanting to do these things. Like, it's like, I can imagine someone who avoids going to the sukkah and never comes to the realization that it's better than the people.
Right, but what do you think happens if he forces himself to be there? You think he moves forward?
I don't know. Like I said, there's that inyan that you do something, and hopefully, as you do it, you kind of you put yourself in there, and then eventually your feelings about it change. And that sort of stuff.
So I think a good example would be the prayers of Yom Kippur. I think that's the type of thing which the first time you walk in, it's like, let me out of here. This is really long. But it can grow on you. So I think a person should be open and try things very slowly. Meaning it's like I was once in I walked into a store here in the neighborhood, and as can sometimes happen, I don't know if you guys ever encountered this, the girl behind the counter was on her cell phone, so I didn't exist. But I can't help hearing her conversation. It's a small store, smaller than the sukkah. And she's there talking to her friend. She says, I went to my religious relatives for Shabbos. Boy, you know what religious people do on Shabbos? They wouldn't let me shower on Shabbos. They're crazy. So I asked myself, what type of relatives are these? Meaning, let's think for a minute. I can understand that they told her not to shower on Shabbos. It's not what I would do if I had a guest. I wouldn't get involved. You know, let her do whatever she wants. She's not keeping Shabbos altogether. She's in my house now. She'll take a shower. What's the worst thing that'll happen? So she took a shower on Shabbos, but at least she experienced Shabbos in every other way. You don't teach a person everything in 1 second. But I also had to ask myself, was that the only thing she experienced about Shabbos? She didn't have a delicious Shabbos meal. She didn't have a nice niros. She didn't go to shul. She didn't. There was nothing positive to say about the whole Shabbos. Meaning, I could understand they weren't the best hosts, and they didn't understand how you speak to someone who isn't keeping Shabbos and who is very distant from the concepts of Shabbos. But I don't understand her, on the other hand. There was nothing nice about it. So, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I agree with you that sometimes a person has to at least try something and then see if it's as bad as he thought it would be. And sometimes we do get used to things. But I think we have to take it very, very slowly. I always tell the story about the guy who walked into class. It might have been one of your times. Walked into class, and at the end of a Jewish home class, he said, Rabbi, that was fascinating. I never heard of such relationships before. That's something I really want to have a relationship like that. Now, my girlfriend's been calling me. See, I came here from the bar, and she just called me, and she's been calling me, and I know she wants me to come spend the night with her. Should I go or not, Rabbi? You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't say anything. And the whole class is answering him. What do you mean? Going? So he says, look, Rabbi, it's been 3 years now. I've been living in Manhattan every night with a different girl. And I go to the bars, and I end the night with a girl. Now I met this girl here in Israel, and she's calling me. Should I go or shouldn't I go? So I'm not answering him, and the whole class is, what do you mean? Why don't you answer him, Rabbi? He said, tell him no. And I'm not. I said, I don't know you. I don't know. You know what? I can't answer you. We don't know one another yet. And the guy is standing there back and forth, and he says, well, I'm thinking maybe I should spend the night at Machon Meir, but I don't have a towel here. So I said, if that's your problem, come walk home with me. I'll give you a towel. He said, but I don't have linen. I said, if that's the problem, I'll give you a set of linen. So the guy walked home with me, took the towel, took the linen, stayed the night. He said, but only one night. I said, no problem. Back then, Machon Meir was more easy about letting a guy stay the night. This is before we had a shortage of rooms. So the guy spends the night, and to make a long story short, he spent a month and another month and started keeping Shabbat and started leading a whole different lifestyle. And what would have happened had I said, what, are you crazy? Are you going to go with her? It's a biblical prohibition. It's this, it's that. I don't know. I don't think I would have gotten anywhere. It's not what he had to hear. But he grew at his pace. No one told him what to do. So I think that's very important. A person has to grow slowly. Let a guy take his time. None of us made any big changes quickly and lasted. No one here who was able to stick to a change made it very fast. Every one of you did it at your own pace. You made a few changes. Maybe you were ready for a big change. I had a very interesting conversation with a guy a few weeks ago about Shiduchim. He said, I date girls and they don't understand. I grew up religious. I grew up religious Christian, but I grew up religious. And so going from Christianity to Judaism, as big of a change as it was, I was used to a lot of things. So it wasn't a big change for me. You know, it's an interesting concept. If you don't encounter it, you don't understand it. So sometimes it looks like a guy made a big change, and he explained to me. He said to me the biggest change he had to make was davening. He said, being Christian, he was allowed to say whatever he wanted in davening. And suddenly, I remember this conversation with him. He came to me and said, how am I supposed to say the same words 3 times a day? And how are they supposed to have meaning for me? That was, by him, that was the biggest change. Going from Christianity to Judaism. Wow. The davening. Interesting, right?
Yes.
Okay, so sometimes we don't see. You look at a guy and you say, hey, he made a lot of changes in one shot. No, you talk to him and I'll tell you how, to him, those weren't major changes. What?
It's just a new set of clothes.
Right. To him, in many ways, it wasn't yet a big change. There were other areas that were a big change, and in those areas, any person who lasts does them slowly. You can't. So I agree with you, yes. Sometimes you have to try something a little bit, and with time it grows on you. It's like taking trips in Israel. Some people aren't interested in taking trips in Israel. If you take trips, you'll connect to the land, and then you'll be interested in taking trips in Israel. If you sit around the yeshiva all day and all night and you never walk around Israel, so then you never connect, and then some things have to grow on you. You should know. I don't know which of you go on which trips. I didn't mean that as a message to anyone.
We tried to make the trip today, but it didn't work out too well.
Dov, yes, you want to say something?
No.
Okay, so let's continue a little bit more. And then we got to go order the pizza. So he said, this is the concept of the Simchat Beit HaShoeva as well. That when they poured the water, the libation of the water alludes to the love of Hashem, and through that a person attains true happiness. B'zeh she'amar, and that's what the Talmud tells us about Simchat Beit HaShoeva. It says, Kol mi shelo ra Simchat Beit HaShoeva, whoever did not see the happiness, the jubilance that was in the temple in the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, if you didn't witness that, says the Talmud, Lo ra simcha miyamav. You never saw happiness. If you never saw that, you never saw true happiness. Perush, what does it mean? Mi shelo hegiya ledarga zo, whoever did not attain that level, sheyachol limsor ta'anotav ve'avotav la'Hashem yitbarach, that he could focus his pleasures and his love to Hashem, eino yachol hegiya lemidat ha'simcha amitit, then he's never going to attain true happiness. True happiness is just not there if you can't focus it that way. The only way you could attain it is if you shake yourself of the worldly pleasures. Isn't it interesting? You look at Western society, and they keep thinking that it's through worldly pleasures that they'll gain happiness. And you see the opposite is true. You see they're getting more and more distant from it. You ask in all surveys that were conducted in the last half a century, we see that the level of happiness and satisfaction keeps going down. The more people have, the less they're happy with it. Because if that's the source of my happiness, I'm not going to get happy through that. That can't be the source of happiness. You with me? Yeah?
All the shrinks know, so why doesn't change?
I don't think the shrinks know that.
No?
Remind me after we finish the recording. I'll tell you about my experience with shrinks. I've been working with shrinks for about 15 years. It started when I volunteered in a children's home for children who came from abusive homes, and then when I was a teacher, and I've been working with shrinks, and I don't want to say it in the recording. Back to our Netivot Shalom. ולכן קבעה תורה שמחה זו בחג הסוכות אחרי יום כיפור. And that's why the Torah set this happiness of Simchat Bet HaShoeva דווקא on Sukkot, which is after Yom Kippur, שבו תהיה ריש יהודי את עצמו מכל פגמיו. On Yom Kippur, a person perfected himself. וכבר היה מסוגל להגיע למדרגה הגבוהה ביותר, להתנער מכל ענייני עולם הזה, ולמסור את כל האהבה להשם יתברך. And through Yom Kippur, we can step forward. We can move up to shake ourselves of the focus on this world and focus our love on Hashem, עד שישיג את מידת השמחה, to the point where a person can attain the level of happiness. ומשום כך בשמחת בית השואבה היו שואבים רוח הקודש. And that's why at the happiness of שמחת בית השואבה, they would draw out prophecy. And if you think about it, there's another point we could say that I don't see him saying.
Can you define that term though, draw out prophecy?
Not yet. In a minute. If you think about it, Simchat Bet HaShoeva is the essence of simplicity. What are we rejoicing? We're drawing water, the most simple thing, out of the ground, only to pour it back into the ground. It doesn't get more simple than that. What are we rejoicing here? You know, what am I doing? I'm drawing water, carrying it a distance, pouring it back into the ground. If you think about it, what's going on here? But I'm doing it because God said so. I have a mitzvah to do it, so now this most simple action becomes something that's amazing. Think about it. Think about the message. What's
like,
going on here?
Like the red heifer.
Like the red heifer? Right. If you start thinking about it, and if we want to think more deeply, then there's another message to it. And this message is really the secret strength that the Jewish people had throughout the exile. Look at our history. What did the nations do to us? They kept telling us we're worthless. God hates us. We're no longer the chosen people. We've betrayed God, and so God no longer loves us. And that we're the worst people on the planet. Just look at the cartoons. Look at what the whole world keeps saying about us. It's not over. Just read a European newspaper over the last few weeks. See what the world says about us. The Jews are in their ghettos, and laws are being formulated to make everything impossible for them. We can't own land. We have special taxes against us. There are pogroms. Every so often we're exiled from a country, we're banished. You have the Spanish Inquisition. You have the British expulsion. You have Shakespeare, who never met a Jew in his life, writing about how the Jew is the miser, and the Jew is the pound of flesh, and the Jew is everything bad. And everyone knows we're horrible people. And yet, the Jews maintain throughout all this time not only their dignity, but their joy, and their happiness, and their home. And what's one of the secrets of the Jewish strength, if you think about it? It's the capacity to make life special. It's not only that in Judaism we value life, it's also the fact that every kala, when she gets married, gets silver candlesticks from her mother-in-law. And every Jewish home, you come Friday night, you don't just eat bread. You have something under the bread, you have something over the bread. Now you've taken something which all week you ate the same bread, but now it's special. It's challah. It's Shabbos. You're eating the same meal in the same house. No, it's not the same meal. We sanctify the time. The capacity to make something special. And you should know that in life you can make everything special. I tell couples that are having issues, my recommendation is, take 5 minutes, not more than that, 5 minutes in the morning, or if the kids are around in the morning and the afternoon, if you can make it home, or if not, at night when the kids are sleeping. 5 minutes. Sit down with a cup of tea and 3 tea biscuits. One for you, one for her, and one you share. 5 minutes. But if you can take 5 minutes that you're just focused on sitting together calmly, you're not arguing, you're not yelling at one another, she's not telling you why didn't you take out the garbage, you're not telling her why didn't you pay the bills, you're not, 5 minutes, all I want, 5 minutes. But you could take 5 minutes where you have Olam Haba. And that was one of the Jewish strengths in throughout our exile. The Shabbos, if you think, what's the Shabbos? What's a shul? Look at how the Jews took one little hut, and now it's special, it's holy. And the idea of it, if you think of the Nisuch HaMayim, we're all dancing and rejoicing, and that we get prophecy, we draw our prophecy from what? from our capacity to connect with simplicity. Because joy is not about libating wine. Joy is not about fasting and Yom Kippur and now I'm holy. Joy is about taking the simplest thing in life and being able to say, that's special, I'm doing a mitzvah for Hashem. This is amazing. And you know, you could have true joy from a banana. You could have true joy from anything if you're willing to focus your life on it. If you're willing to focus on the importance of what you're doing it. You could come and eat a banana. But I always tell the story about a relative of mine who was orphaned at a young age. And when I was still a bachelor, I was a young kid. We went there for a Shabbos, and she spoke to her kids about the beauty of a warm shower, a warm bath. She didn't have it as a kid. And she says, you know, every time I walk into a warm shower before Shabbos, I say, wow, God gave me the Garden of Eden in my house. I can have a warm shower. I once called my grandmother, and she said, what's doing? And I said, nothing special. She said, I never want to hear that from you again. She told me about how she was in Poland, and when the Nazis came, she hid under the floorboards. And for 2 weeks, she and her sister were under the floorboards, living with their own feces and everything, and only at night they could sneak out and get whatever food they can, and for minutes until they went back under the floorboards. She said the stench there was so unbearable that she promised God, she said, if you give me one more normal breath of air, one more time to sit on a rooftop and breathe normal air, I will never thank you enough. She said, you breathe normal air today? Don't tell me there's nothing special. That was my grandmother. Most of the shmooze I got from my grandmother. So, even the air we breathe, Chazal say, Kol ha-neshama ta'alel ka. For every breath, you could sing song of praise to Hashem. I think one of the secrets of our strength throughout the diaspora, one of the secrets that held us, was our capacity to make it special. Look at what we're sitting in now. Look around you. What do you have here? You have dry leaves over your head. You have simple panels all around you, and you're sitting out here. And you say, ah, I have a mitzvah of sukkah. It's beautiful. All of sukkah is about simplicity. It's about taking the simple things. I don't need anything fancy. Once upon a time, a lulav was something that grew in everyone's yard. The Yemenites still have esrogen growing in their front yard. I have a hadassim tree right there. I have an arava tree right there. These weren't complicated things to get. It's not like today where you spend 500 shekel and you ask yourself, did I get the nicest one? Okay, I didn't spend 500 shekel. Okay, you spend 100 shekel. But once upon a time, it was free. And the Gemara says sukkah is a free holiday because they used to have they used to just be able to dig and make themselves simple four walls, all this stuff, all that they had surplus. This was the season when they had extra branches and leaves and stuff. They'd make a sukkah for free. Sukkah was a free holiday, the Gemara says. But the idea of sukkah is that happiness is about simplicity. Happiness is not about the Rolls Royce. So that's my addition. But if you think about it, the capacity to make something special is brilliant. There was once a Rebbe who told the kids, now I have something very special for you. He took out a regular toffee that all the kids get toffee at home. You know, here in Israel, that's like their standard sweet. They don't have lollipops, they give toffees. What do they throw at a chazan toffee? You know, that's the standard sweet here in Israel. And he took the toffee and he said, this toffee is no ordinary toffee. This is a toffee you're getting from your Rebbe. You guys know how special this toffee is? When you take this toffee and slowly unwrap it and put it in your mouths, you will see it as the sweetest toffee you ever tasted in your life. This is the most spectacular. You spent 5 minutes talking about this toffee. When the kids got it, they came home and said, Ima, you got to get a toffee like the Rebbe. So the mothers call the Rebbe and say, what'd you get? And the Rebbe says, oh, regular toffee. But it's all about making it special. We're all that way. And that's one of the secrets. You could make life special. But it doesn't work if you do it every day. Just like Shabbos can't work every day. You can't have every day special. You have the Shabbos, you have the Yamin Tovim.
Ki ei efshar la'asig malat ruach ha'kodesh ela k'shein la'adam afilu shaychut kala li'inyanei ha'olam hazeh.
Prophets used to strip themselves. It says when King Saul got prophecy, he went naked. Because a person feels like if I want prophecy, I can't be connected to these mundane things. That's why specifically in the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, when they would cleanse themselves of the worldly things, specifically then, they would draw out prophecy. And we're left with okay, we'll get it. We're left with another two paragraphs. We'll pause now and we'll pick up the Zachem with the concluding paragraphs.